Welcome back to our third hour with Jordan Maxwell tonight, and hearing some just unforgettable stories from the Maxwell Files. All right, JM, let's go ahead and tell us this one. Reset this one for us.
Yeah, what was I talking about?
What was it, Jim? Yeah, but the one in Box Valley was the last
okay,
one.
Okay, yeah.
Now, before that, we were up on the roof doing the meteorites.
That
was the ghoul.
Right.
Before that was the dinosaur.
I remember now.
Okay, all right.
Now, I was up on the... This was only about 2 years ago. And the house that we were staying in for the long weekend, we went up, my friend Jeff and myself, and went up to visit some mutual friends, and they wanted us to stay over the weekend with them, so... But we were upstairs, and the upstairs bedroom where we were staying opened out onto the roof of the rest of the house, which was down, you know, going down the hill. It was one of those multi-level things.
Where was this again?
This was on Box Canyon Road.
Box
Canyon Road in West San Fernando Valley.
Right.
Yeah, it's between San Fernando Valley and Simi. And so it's like...
Which is near... The Rocketdyne facility.
That's exactly right.
Santa Susana Mountains.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Rocketdyne's there where they test the rockets out later.
Maybe other things.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, I've been through that facility myself once. But anyway, so we're sitting up there admiring the absence, because of the kind of person I am. I love doing that. I love going out in the desert and sitting out there by myself for hours, and I'm just dazzled by the beauty of the universe and all the strange things that are going on that other people just don't have any clue as to what's going on. So anyway, so I'm sitting up on the roof with my friend Jeff about midnight, beautiful starry night, and I said to Jeff, I said, you know what, if God would give me something, if I were going to ask for some little favor, you know what I would ask for is I'd like to see a meteorite come right down and hit on the mountain right across from us on that mountain. And when I said that, I swear, a meteor shot down out of the sky and hit on the exact point where I was, you know, foolishly sitting there pointing. That's exactly where it hit.
Well, God seeks to please, Jordan, you know that.
And I'm serious.
Gee, talk about room service.
And Jeff looked at me, I looked at him, and we were actually emotionally moved by that. It was scary. It was one of those synchronistic, strange things. My God. I mean, I never expected, and it actually happened. And at that moment, it wasn't later on, it was right then. And so that's, you know, that's one more.
Was the impact, Jordan, would you say it was...
It was...
How do you know it hit, first of all?
First of all, we saw it come down, and when it hit, I have wanted to go up to that... I know right where it hit.
Was it Rocketdyne?
Yeah, no, it's just above Rocketdyne, about maybe a couple of blocks into the mountain area. But I drove up there that night. My friend Jeff and I got down quickly, and we drove up, and that area is owned by, there's a house, and there's the only road leading up into that particular little area of the canyon. There's a big house, and it says, keep off private property. So we wanted to go there the next day and ask the people if we could go out on their property and look for it. But then I thought, no, because if I find it, they're going to own it. And so I thought, well, maybe I could get the guy who we were staying with, because he said he knew the people up there, and maybe they'd let me keep it if I found it. I still would like to go out there yet, because I know exactly where it came down. I could point it out.
Did you sense an impact, or did you just see it disappear from view?
No, we felt the impact. It just, boom, it came down out of nowhere, and it shot across right where I was pointing, and it hit right across from us, I don't know, two blocks away, a block and a half, two blocks away.
Now let me throw something out here. I don't think you've heard the programs, and we're going to do this again with Roger Lear, Dr. Lear.
Oh, Roger Lear is one of my favorite. And I are great friends.
Yeah, well, he tells the story of his experiences in October, and I guess it's 4 years ago now, mm-hmm. in L.A. when that big fireball came over the Santa Susana Mountains, was witnessed by at least two people that I know of to change course and disappeared right at the Rocketdyne area. Now,
oh, really?
Oh, yes. This is a huge story. And there is a general, Brigadier General in the Air Force Reserves, who was watching from a hill in, I guess, Encino or Tarzana, and saw this thing change course, a fireball.
Yes.
Flying rather horizontal and disappeared at the Rocketdyne area. He was looking down on this thing from his vantage point on top of the Encino or Tarzana Hills.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, we're going to tell this story again with Roger Lear very soon. It is an amazing event, what happened the next day when the Brigadier General drove up there to try to find out what had happened, because he thought something had impacted as well.
And well, I saw the impact. You know.
All right, well, this is very interesting. Wow, that's
and then I got to tell you another one. When I first come out to California in 1959, ended up in North Hollywood with about $9 in my pocket, a typical stupid kid, and I ended up with zero money out here and as far as I could go, so this was it. And so I got a job, and I started learning the town, and I met this girl in a restaurant, and so she and I started hanging out together. She's about my age, and then she'd come to find out, she only lived about two blocks from my place. And so we started hanging out, meeting each other down at the restaurant on the weekends, etc. And one day she came over to my room, and she said to me, "My father wants to meet you." And I, of course, I'm not interested in meeting any girl's father, period. And she says, "No, he's a very interesting and special man, and he wants to talk to you in particular." So I figure, well, okay, let's see what happens. And this is in North Hollywood, 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 59. And I'm 19 years old. And so I go over there. The moment I met him, mm-hmm. just a couple of blocks from where I was, mm-hmm. the moment I met this man, I knew with an immediacy that this was not a normal man, that he radiated some kind of a fearful radiation of aura that was so incredibly strong. But I was not in fear. I was fascinated beyond any description. I loved the aura of this man. He was mystical and powerful in his eyes, and the way he would say things just dazzled me. And I was taken off. And so we went in the front room. We sat there, Sharon and my girlfriend and her younger sister, Mary, and we're mm-hmm. sitting in the front room, and I am just dazzled, wondering, what is this I'm doing? Who is this man? And he's very, very polite, very nice, very generous, has us sit there. We're sitting in front of the fireplace, and we're just chit-chatting, and he tells me, my daughter tells me she's been knowing you for so-and-so long, and then he says to me, just out of the blue, he says, "You remember when you were 8 years, 9 years old, back in Florida, and you were sitting on the back porch that your father had made, a new back porch, and it was green lumber, and you smelled the lumber, and you thought it smelled funny because it was green, and you woke up one night and snuck out on the back porch and you set out looking at the moon and you were talking to God and you were supposed to be in bed, but you liked the smell of the green lumber and you came out and sat on the back porch and you talked to God. Remember, you were a little kid and you said you wanted to do something for God. Remember that?" And that scared me.
I would say.
Nobody knew I did that. And I got very, very alarmed. And I sat there looking at him for a moment, and he says, "Do you remember that?" And I said, "Yes, I remember that." And he said, "We were there. We heard you." And I cannot tell you how the feeling went over me.
Yeah.
I already know there's something wrong here. I already know this is not an ordinary man. Now he tells me this.
Yeah, well, that just went right into your deepest, darkest recesses of... You had no more... You were totally vulnerable.
I was
you had no defenses.
19-year-old kid, and he threw me for a loop. It scared me.
Now, what did your girlfriend... How was...
She looked... And when I looked at her, because I was so disorientated in my thinking, I was rattled. And I looked at her, and she just looked at me and smiled as if to say, well, I told you it was strange, didn't I? And I looked at him, and I said, who are you? And he said, that's not important right now. All you need to know is that we heard you. And I said, what are you trying to tell me? And he said, I'm trying to tell you we were there. We heard you. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And I was really, I had no words. I was truly frightened. I didn't know what the implications of this were.
Of course, overwhelmed.
Oh, totally. And so he said, and he told me things that were going to happen to me in my life later. And he says, don't worry about it. He says, we've been watching you for many years. This and that is going to happen to you, but that will be later on in life. And then he outlined certain things that were going to transpire in my life, and they did, just like he said. And then one day I went over, because I got so used to going over to see him. I couldn't get enough of this man and his aura, and I was intrigued after the first blunt blow, after the first blow. But I became intrigued. Who is he? And I went there one day, and they're gone. The house is totally empty, gone. Zero. And I thought, wow, man, what a trip.
I would say, empty, gone.
Gone. But
nothing
he told more. Me enough. He told me all kinds of things about myself and what was going to happen in my life. He told me it all.
Amazing. Well, all right. I told you, Jordan has a remarkable life. We're going to come back and take you to Area 51 and the Little Ailey Inn next.
Jeff Rentz will be right back after these messages on the Talk Radio Network.
Number of books to his credit. One of them is available especially for, I think, a number of reasons tonight that certainly I have been remiss in not mentioning that we lost a really great American, a great human being not too long ago, a very good friend of yours, Jordan.
Yeah.
I had the absolute honor of having him on the program. Oh, I don't know how many months before he was in the automobile accident and died as a result of it. Steve Allen, true Renaissance man, if there ever was one in our time.
One of the finest, most decent, kindest, most generous, and most brilliant men that I have ever in my life encountered. This was truly a Renaissance gentleman.
Yeah, he's in the archives. You can hear our interview with him. It's about a year and a half ago now. You'll find it there. Steve Allen, for you younger people, he was the man who created the Tonight Show. Actually,
that's right.
He was one of America's great comedians, but he had an intellect second to none. He was a thinking man's comic, in an unpretentious way. He did very straight comedy, but it was so clever. Anyway, it was amazing. Now, you wrote a book with Steve Allen.
Yeah, Steve Allen and myself and about five other authors came in together, and we all decided to put our work together and put a book together, and Tim Leadham was the editor that put it all together into a book, and the book is called The Book Your Church Doesn't Want You to Read. the book your church doesn't want you to read.
And
if you'd like to have a copy of that book, you can call 949, that's area code 949-675-1340. Again, that's 949-675-1340. And I guess just leave your name and the number, and Tim will call you back if you'd like to have the book.
You have to buy the book, but it's available.
Yeah, available from Tim. Anyway.
All right, up to The Little Alien, which, for those of you who may not know it, is a small... Well, you tell them what it is and where it is. We got about a half an hour.
Good. Well, it's going to take at least that.
All right, well, you got to get through it now.
Okay. Right. Now, this story happened to me. This event happened to me in 1994, in December of 94, the first weekend of December. But a year and a half before that happened, I was going to be the best man at my friend's wedding in Palmdale. And so I went up one Saturday morning to be with my friend before his marriage that night, and I was to be the best man. And his wife-to-be with her girlfriends went out to the market, and they came back, and they had this old man with them. And we wondered, who is this coming back? He followed them home in the car, in his car.
Uh-huh.
And he got out and came into the house with them, and she told us that he had met her in the market and said he needed to talk to the man that was going to be the best man in her wedding. And she said, how do you know I'm going to have a wedding? He said, I know. I need to talk for a few moments with the man who's going to be the best man in your wedding. So she said he looked harmless enough. He's a little old man, so she invited him to follow her home. And I'm thinking, what? Oh, who is this? And he says, I have a little something to tell you. He says, a year and a half from now, you're going to be in a desert. You're going to be driving the car. And you're going to be in a desert, and a man will be in the back seat, and a woman will be in the front seat, and you're going to have an extraordinary visit, a visitation, or an experience, UFO experience. And you're going to be driving, and he said the two people in the car, the lady in the front and the man in the back, will not. It's not for them. The experience is for you. But they will be there as two witnesses to establish what actually happened, because it would be so astounding that you're going to need two witnesses to establish this, and that's why they will be with you. And it has already been decided, so just know that in a year and a half from now, that's what's going to happen. So I said to him, well, my friend who's getting married, he and I drive up a lot of times into the desert at night just to go out up above Palmdale,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, look out and look and see what we can see. And he says, no, this is going to be way out in a desert, and it's not going to be in California. It's east of California, and you're going to be way out in a desert. And it won't happen until a year and a half. Well, a year and a half later, I was in Mesquite, Nevada, and I was appearing at a UFO conference in Mesquite, Nevada, a year and a half later.
Okay, all right. Filed that event away and went on with life, and we wonder what the next time that came to mind, that man's statements. We'll see as we continue with Jordan Maxwell in just a couple minutes.
Jeff Rentz will be right back following these messages on the Talk Radio Network.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back with Jordan Maxwell. All right, Jordan, so you're at Mesquite, and from Mesquite, somehow you find your way to the Little Alien.
Well, I was at Mesquite speaking at the International Congress that was over there, and so Sunday morning, we were leaving Mesquite, which is northeast of Las Vegas, and so I had my friend Paul Tice, who was a publisher, my publisher friend, and a lady named Ivy from Hawaii, who was a radio and talk show personality in Hawaii, and she's in the front seat, and Paul's in the back, and I'm driving, and it's a beautiful day, and we're driving into Las Vegas, and just before we got into Las Vegas, I said to them, have any of you, have either one of you ever been up to Area 51, up to Little Alien? No. And I said, well, I haven't either, but Joe and Pat Travis have called and invited me up because they hear me on the radio and they know me, but I've never been up there and never met them. I said, let's go. Great. So we turned around. We got off the freeway, turned around, went back to the right highway, and we're heading up to Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
And a about 2.5-3 hours later, we get there. We pull in the late afternoon. We meet everyone. We sit around and meet all the townspeople. It's a very little, small, tiny place.
Yeah.
And but it's a big restaurant, and the people there have big hearts. They're all sensational people. And so we're sitting there having dinner, and I asked, and so there's when it started to close about 11 o'clock, incidentally, I had told on the way up, I had told Ivy and Paul about my prophecy that I had been given a year and a half before, and here it is a year and a half, and I'd be darned if I'm not driving a car, and with the woman in the front and the man in the back, and I said, so I don't know, let's see what happens. So that night when the restaurant was closing, I asked Joe and Pat, the owners of the Little Alien, I said, well, where do we go to see the UFOs? And Joe, with his cool humor, he said, just go out in the parking lot. They'll find you if they want to. And then Pat said, no, no, go out on the highway, then go south, go back toward Las Vegas south at 20 miles. Exactly at the 20 mile, you'll see the famous black mailbox.
Yeah.
And park there and just wait and see what you see. Okay? So we got in the car. I'm driving. Ivy and Paul's with me. And we get out on the highway, and I turn left. Not right, and I'm going north, not south, and I'm going get up to 20 miles north of Alien, and then it occurred to me, there's no mailbox, there's not going to be one because we're going the wrong way, and so Ivy said, and Ivy didn't catch the fact that we were going the wrong way. Paul didn't catch the idea we were going the wrong way, and I didn't know it, and so we stopped the car. I'm driving. I stopped the car. And I said, all right, let's go back to Alien. We'll stay in the motel, then we'll go out and do it again tomorrow night. Fine. And so where the car came to a stop, there was a wide dirt road leading off into the desert. Now, it was totally overcast. You couldn't see anything. Totally overcast. And it's like about midnight. And Little Alien is 130 miles north. In the high desert of Nevada, 130 miles north of Las Vegas, and now we are 20 miles north of that. We're 150 miles north of Vegas, out in the desert, just exactly what that guy said, way out in the desert. And it's totally overcast from horizon to horizon, about midnight. And so we stopped the car, and I said, I'm going to turn around, and then they said, no, no, let's go out in the desert. You know, there's a road going out there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I don't want to go out there. What are you going to see? It's overcast anyway. No, no, no. Let's go out in the desert. And I said, Ivy, I don't like this idea. I don't like getting off the road. It's just a car. Okay, so we get off, and we drive out the road after a little argument. We drive out, and maybe two blocks off the highway.
Mm-hmm. No, and no other cars around, right?
No cars nowhere. We're 150 miles out in the middle of nowhere.
No streetlights, no golden arches.
Zero. Nothing. And that's what dark is and scary is when you're out in the middle of the high desert and no one's around. And so all of a sudden I got this really incredibly strong feeling that I had done something bad, wrong. Maybe we were on government military installation or something. Something told me we have made the wrong decision here. I need to get out of here.
Huh.
I stopped the car and I said to both of them, look, I don't know what I'm feeling, but I want to get out of here. We've done something wrong. And I backed up quickly.
Huh.
And when I backed up, Ivy and Paul jumped all over me. They said, look, at the least you could do. It's a dirt road. There were no signs. You're not on a military installation.
Mm-hmm.
You could stop the car 2 minutes. What's it going to take? 2 minutes, we get out, and we see what we can see. And I said, we're not going to see anything. It's overcast.
Is the top down on the car?
No. This is a hard top.
Okay.
And so they said, no, stop the car. Let's get out. I said, all right, but if
now,
something...
Let me do this. This is very good. It's nighttime. It's about what time of
midnight?
Night?
About midnight.
About midnight. Is it cold this time of year?
No,
or hot?
No, it was not. It was not cold at all.
All right, this is summer.
No, it was actually in the first weekend of December, but it wasn't that bad up there for some
interesting.
Yeah.
Overcast. About how high up was the overcast?
Well, it was a heavy, heavy overcast, so... It wasn't really that high up. It's a very heavy cloud, so it wasn't that, it wasn't that
And yet
far.
You could see, it was dark, but you could still see the clouds.
Well, the reason why we knew it was heavy overcast is because, we heard that it was going to be, but we decided to go out anyway. But when I stopped the car and turned off the lights, then we discovered how dark really is.
It
was absolutely no light. The eye could see no light, period.
Nothing.
So you get out of the car when you're...
That is scary, Jordan.
It is very scary. You hold on to the car, and all you know is your friend's voice. You can't see anything. Totally black. And so I'm holding on to the car, and I'm talking to them, and we weren't out of the car more than a minute at the most. And I said to Paul and Ivy, what are we doing out here? What do you expect to see? And just as I said that, the clouds just north of us opened up a little bit. There was like an oval opening of the clouds, just kind of broke open. And, of course, you could see the stars are out and everything. You could
so
see.
So there's one little opening in the clouds.
In the clouds.
And of course, all right, hold on. This is a good place to pause. But everything else is pitch black, and the only thing you can really see is a little round oval of stars through the overcast.
That's it.
Stand by. We'll be right back with Jordan in just a couple minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz, RENSE.com. Do stop by and visit. We think you'll like it. Be right back. Okay, back with Jordan Maxwell. We are 1994 in the high desert, 20 miles the wrong way from the little alien. The sky in a pitch black, and we're talking black, folks, as in totally devoid of anything. The sky opens up a little bit. Jordan sees stars. Was there any moon above those clouds?
Nope.
Okay, all right.
That we saw was just this little oval opening in the cloud just north of us.
Okay.
And I always forget to tell the audience, so let me quickly fill this in case I forget before. My website, if you want to go to my website, is simply www.bbcoa. Simple. bbcoa.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we're standing outside the car, and this little oval opening opens up, and of course, and when it's totally dark, any opening at all you see. And so Ivy said, look, the clouds are breaking up. And we all looked to the north, and through that opening came two glowing bluish white glowing saucer-shaped things, which immediately to me looked like holograms, because they were glowing a very bluish white, And as they came through, they leveled off immediately under the clouds so that their light was reflecting off the heavy clouds above them.
Oh, it must have been beautiful. Stunning beyond belief. How far away? About a mile? Half a mile?
I don't know. Maybe a mile or so just ahead of us.
Uh-huh.
And the two came through. They were absolutely, totally no sound, no metal superstructure. They were not flying. They were merely in a dreamlike state of floating. They just kind of floated through
the hole.
And it come through the opening in the clouds. Now,
yeah.
The both of them were about the size that the moon would appear in the sky, like a silver dollar at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
About the size the moon would appear in the sky, these two beautiful bluish-white glowing saucers shaped things came through very slow and hugged the clouds just above them so that they were radiating this beautiful bluish-white, and five more came in behind them. Now there's seven of these beautiful bluish-white glowing disc-shaped things, and I am totally blown away. And Ivy is jumping around, and Paul is jumping around screaming at Ivy like children seeing Santa Claus, and they're jumping around and excited. I am scared to death. For some reason, it absolutely spoofed me. I was totally frightened, and I stood there for about maybe 30 seconds looking at this beautiful, quiet, totally no sound, gorgeous, beautiful, bluish-white, glowing things above our heads, and I was frightened. And Ivy and Paul still jumping around,
What were they doing, Jordan? What were the seven?
They were just moving quietly, and then they would change positions. One would move here, the other one would move there, then another one would drop down a little lower, and another one would cross over where he was, and they were kind of like changing places just to show us what they could do. But they weren't moving very fast. They were very slow, very deliberate, and beautiful to watch, and it was almost like a dream. It was so beautiful to behold. And yet I was shaking, and I was legitimately frightened. And I don't mind admitting it. I was legitimately frightened, and I had no idea what this portent to be, what was going to happen, who this was. I didn't want to know. And I finally had enough after about 30 seconds to 30 to 45 seconds, I estimate at the most. And I said to Ivy and Paul, get in the car. I'm getting out of here. I told you something was going to happen. And they wouldn't get in the car. I jumped in, turned the engine on, and I said, if you don't get in, I'm leaving. And I started the engine, and they knew I was serious. So they got in, but they were mad. So they rolled the window down, and I started to take off in the dark because I was thinking, you know, if we go in the dark, they're not going to see us. But I also intellectually knew, no, that with their technology like this, they saw you coming. And so I flipped on the light and decided to put my foot to the floor. I'm two blocks out in the desert, now about 12:30 at night. I took off for the highway wide open with the foot to the floor, and I was very concerned about overshooting the highway because I'm speeding. And when I took off, Ivy and Paul went totally, totally ballistic, screaming as loud as they could in absolute horror at each other, screaming and yelling. I am already frightened to death to start with.
What do you mean they were screaming at?
They were screaming their heads off at each other.
What were they saying?
I don't even remember what they were saying.
They were scared?
It was too loud. It was as if they were in absolute fear. Absolute
total
terror.
Panic. Hysterical panic.
Hysterical screaming and yelling at each other. And I am already frightened. Now I'm really scared. And I'm screaming at the top of my voice to shut up. And I'm speeding in this car. And I'm scared to start with. And so I slowed the car down so I could look out. I rolled the window down quickly to look out to see what they were seeing. And these seven beautiful bluish-white discs had now come down right over the car. I don't know, maybe like a block or so up over the car. But now they're big. Now they're big, and now they're really impressive. And they're moving around us quickly, zipping around us. And they come into a circle and blow out into a seven-pointed star, then come back into a circle, blow back into a seven-pointed configuration, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, very quickly, a star circle, star circle. And then they're moving around us in these huge, beautiful, bluish-white disks moving all over the desert floor. And it's scaring me to death because I know we've been had. They were not going to outrun this thing. I don't know who it is, and I knew we shouldn't be here, and I was scared to death. And I hit the highway, and as I hit the highway, we jumped out of the car because we felt safer. Instantly, I felt safer when I was on the highway. And they had gone back into the desert. They went back into the desert. We could see them leaving very quickly, zipping back into the desert. And then all of a sudden, they just shot straight up, just exactly the way Steven Spielberg had in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when they just shot straight up into the clouds, and they're gone. Zip. Gone. They just shot straight up into the clouds and were totally gone.
Did they go out the hole?
No. No, they just shot straight up indiscriminately in all directions. Boom. Gone.
Huh.
And we stood out there on the highway, and quite literally every kind of emotion in a human body was flowing. We were laughing. We were actual tears. We were frightened. It was beautiful. It was frightening. It was wonderful. It was scary. You know, what else? And we're standing out there shaking, and the big question, of course, what just happened? Was this our, was this us, or was this something else from somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, knew. There was no decision. We knew that this was not of this world. No possible way. And so as we drove back to Little Alien, well, of course, we were nervous. I was driving slow because my hands were shaking, and I was shaking all over, and so was Ivy and Paul, and we were absolutely frightened now that all three of us were really legitimately scared. And we got back to the Little Alien, and we had another event that happened. The next morning, I got up late, and Paul and Ivy were in the restaurant already having breakfast, talking to the people, and there was a big group around the table listening. So when I walked in, I thought that Paul and Ivy were telling everybody about the experience we had the night before. And no, I come in to find out they're talking about what happened to them in the motel. We had a visit in the motel, Paul and Ivy did, and I slept through it. And Paul was telling about what happened to him. Ivy was telling them what happened to them, and I said, well, I didn't see anything. And Paul's eyes were big as saucers, and he was legitimately emotionally upset, and he was stuttering and telling people what had happened, and it was really an incredible experience, and this is only one-third of the whole experience. We'll have to come back another time and follow up on this, because it got bigger, and it got more severe.
No doubt there was a linkage there.
No doubt.
Did the people who run the Little Alien have any question about the encounters?
No, both Joe and Pat shook their heads as if to say, yep, that's right, that's the kind of stuff that happens here. The area that that this happened is called, it's 20 miles north of Alien, and it's called Railroad Junction. And the last time I went out there with about six people, went out with me about 6 months ago. We had extraordinary experiences out there late at night. I think that this, when I hear people say that that there's nothing really going on out at the Area 51 anymore, and they've moved the place, you believe it. That base is way too big and too much money and too big that they just move it because a bunch of people happen to drive by and see something. No, they haven't moved anything. Don't you believe it. You go north of Alien for 20 miles and park your car out there up in Railroad Junction and sit there after 12 midnight, and you see if there's anything going on out there. I will guarantee you there's a lot of strange stuff happening out there.
Well, I hear clearly the emotion in your voice, Jordan. What a life-altering event. And you've had a number of those in your life, but that had to
many.
Overwhelming.
Yeah, I've had many. We'll talk about these things again. Let me quickly say, if you want my book again, please call my friend Tim at 949-675-1340.
And the website
is? The website is bbcoa.com.
Thanks, Jordan. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Mr. Jordan Maxwell. I'm going to take 21 hours off, be back tomorrow night. We're going to do the Shroud of Turin and hear from John Whitley as well. See you then.